2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind, only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was three blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com, follow us on Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
Time to take KSL Outdoors. This is Utah's most listened to program about hunting, fishing, camping, and high adventure. All the gear you need to buy, where the fish are biting, and secret places in Utah and around the world where you can have a blast. KSL Outdoors with host Tim Hughes on KSL News Radio 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
Welcome back, and our thanks to ABC and, of course, KSL's news department for helping us out with what's happening locally and nationally here on KSL News Radio. Just a reminder as we begin hour number two and the final one for the program for another week that we are recording this program on Wednesday.
We have to keep announcing that?
Does that bother you?
Yeah.
Okay. But we're on the road this week. We're actually over in Steamboat, Colorado. Some of us are, anyway, enjoying a ski weekend. We'll tell you more about that on next week's show. Nice to have you, though. Tim Hughes, along with Russ Smith from Sky Call.
You want me to say something?
That's your cue.
Okay. Good morning. You need to put up the screen so you can read what he's supposed to say.
I need a script right here in front of me, yeah.
Name, address, phone number. Yeah. And Navi's here with us this morning, too.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Welcome, Faith.
Oh, yeah, let's bring Faith Jolly in. Hi, Faith.
I'm here, yes. Thanks for having me.
This is a jolly place for sure.
Oh, boy. I told you were going to be sorry. I told you you were going to be sorry you answered the phone today. But it's good to have you. Faith Jolly keeps us in touch and on top of what's happening with the Division of Wildlife Resources. I wanted to have you on this week, though, because this past week, Amanda and I on Utah's Morning News did the story quite a bit about a situation in Moab that has to do with feeding the deer, but also has ties to chronic wasting disease, which some people might be scratching their heads on what the connection is there.
Yeah, we recently found a deer. There's been a couple deers recently, actually, that have been found dead in different Moab residents' yards, unfortunately. And they have been confirmed as, you know, having chronic wasting disease. But one of them, we were kind of concerned because when they did kind of the necropsy for it to determine the cause of death, they discovered some corn kernels in the gut of this deer, which suggests that people were feeding it. We're just kind of, because of that and several other reasons, we're just trying to spread the reminder to people that, you know, while it's not illegal to feed wildlife, it's a pretty bad idea.
Yeah, and we've talked about before that feeding any animal is not a good idea, that a fed bear ends up being a dead bear because it becomes habituated to expecting food in a particular place, and then it comes looking for the food that isn't there, and it starts rooting around to find it, you know, wherever it might be close, and then it gets in trouble for being in places it shouldn't be. It's really not fair to the animals. That's where all of this starts, right?
Right, it does. And yeah, public safety is actually a huge reason why we don't want people to feed wildlife, kind of as you mentioned, that it, you know, they come habituated to coming to towns and neighborhoods and by highways, and it can increase traffic accidents. But one of the other main reasons that we're kind of spreading this is, like we talked about, is this concern of chronic wasting disease, because it is a very, you know, easily transmitted disease. When you're feeding deer, they tend to congregate, right? And so if they have chronic wasting disease, you know, it spreads through their feces and their urine and saliva. And so if they're all feeding in one area, you know, it's going to be easier to transmit that disease amongst them. And so this is, you know, obviously it's a concern for us. It's something that we're monitoring. And right now it's not very widespread in Utah. And so we just want to make sure we keep it that way. And part of that is reminding the public, you know, to not congregate these deer like that.
Do you have something you want to say?
Well, I did. I traveled down there quite a bit, and that is such a hazardous area to drive because of the amount of deer that accumulate along 191. And it has gotten better with the new fences and things, but still, I mean, they don't need any help to be around people.
Exactly, yep. Yeah. And that's a big concern, you know, they already are migrating into these lower elevation areas during the winter, you know, looking for feed. And so if they also know that somebody's going to be feeding them in their yard, that's another draw. And yeah, it's a big safety concern and just for the health of the animals.
And there is a lot of feed down there naturally for the deer. I don't think there's any deer starving down in that area.
Also salt on the roads sometimes, when they salt the roads.
Will attract them. It's not just the deer either, though, is it? It's elk and moose, too.
It is, yep. So they're both at risk for this chronic wasting disease. We've had more confirmed cases of deer in Utah, simply because, you know, they're the most populated big game animal that we have here in the state. We just have more deer, so it makes sense that we'd have more cases of them having CWD. But yeah, it can spread to these other animals as well. And as part of that, you know, obviously we're really concerned about chronic wasting disease, but also just feeding wildlife in general. You know, if you introduce the wrong type of food to them, you know, especially during winter, it can actually do more harm than good as well.
Yeah. I hope I got this part of the story right, and it jumped out at me that a dead carcass, so you say a deer dies from chronic wasting and, you know, begins to, what's the word?
Decompose.
Decompose, gets into the soil, and the scary thing is, if my understanding was right, that can stay there, that contaminant can stay there for years.
Wow, I hope not.
And then the grass?
And that's part of the issue. Yeah, this disease is spread by kind of these protein prions. And so, yeah, they'll stay in the soil, and they're really resistant to any kind of chemical and, you know, environmental degradation. And so it's there for years. And so that's another reason that, you know, it's a serious issue that we want to kind of maintain and keep under control.
Deer have an interesting biology, too. Their stomachs are really something I hadn't heard about before, that it's actually split into four parts.
Yeah, so they're kind of like cows in that regard, that they have these four different stomachs, you know, four-part stomachs, and, yeah, each of their stomach chambers will kind of break down the food. And so that's kind of what I was mentioning is, you know, if during the winter they're primarily feeding off of sagebrush, you know, that's kind of the main food source for them. A lot of the other feed is covered by snow. And so that's kind of what their stomach is used to processing. And so if somebody else, you know, suddenly introduces something else to their diet, you know, they're going to have a harder time switching and digesting that. And we've actually seen deer, you know, that will die from starvation with full stomachs just because they couldn't process that.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you may think, oh, it's snowy, they don't have enough feed, I'm going to put out some hay or some corn or whatever. And then that actually, like I said, it can do more harm than good a lot of times.
I know one of the questions that comes up when we talk about chronic wasting is can it be contracted by humans or pets, dogs and cats?
So there haven't been any confirmed cases right now. Like the CDC recommends avoiding, and like we recommend avoiding any disease-looking animals. But yeah, right now they haven't really shown that other species or humans can contract chronic wasting disease. But yeah, we recommend, you know, if you have concerns, contact us and we can test your deer, you know, if you've hunted or harvested one. But yeah, in the most part, we just ask that you avoid them and then, you know, give us a call if you do think an animal in your area has, you know, is sick or has these issues.
Well, and during the hunt, we always talk about all of the stops that the division has set up, and people voluntarily bring their deer over, and you'll do some random sampling of brain tissue and things like that. And we've been doing a pretty good job, haven't we, of actually keeping this disease at bay?
Yeah, so like I said, it's not very widespread in Utah. You know, right now it's just in a couple of counties in central and eastern Utah primarily. But yeah, we are sampling a lot of the other areas and hunting units around the state, just to make sure that we kind of are aware and we're monitoring. And we did recently approve, our latest mule deer management plan, and it does include a section kind of ways that we can help slow the spread of the disease, you know, doing different hunts and things like that. So, it's something that we're really monitoring, and we're definitely trying to make sure we stay on top of.
All right, while we've got you here, one more question, because you sent out a release about anglers needing to report tagged northern pike caught in Utah Lake. What's that about?
Yeah, so this is kind of a change because, you know, northern pike were illegally introduced into Utah Lake, and so for a couple of years now, we've been asking anglers to just catch and kill them since they're invasive predators. You know, they've kind of, there's been some concerns for how they're affecting the June sucker, which is endangered in Utah Lake. But right now, there's one exception to the catch and kill for northern pike. We're asking anglers, if you catch one with a little red tag, to report that tag number to us and let us know where you caught it, when you caught it, and then actually to release the fish. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to ask, what's the reason? Did we put fish in there that are tagged so we can locate the rest of them?
So, yeah, pretty much. We're tagging some right now. We're going to be tagging them for about 6 weeks. We're hoping to tag at least 50 of the bigger, 12-inch or longer northern pike. And, yeah, basically these tags indicate that we've inserted a transmitter, so that we can track them at GPS. And this is all basically part of a 5-year study that we're doing to learn more about their seasonal locations and movements so that we can develop a kind of more effective control program in the future.
So you're going to eradicate them. Let me ask you, how come we didn't put in one of those mules on one of those hybrids, maybe like a tiger muskie? That way they can't get away from us. They're going to die after 5 years.
You know, that's a great question, and probably more suited for one of our biologists.
Yeah. In the press release, you said if a tagged spike or a tagged pike inadvertently dies, you'd still like to recover that fish so the transmitter can be reused. But you're asking for the cooperation here, obviously, of anybody that might catch a tagged pike, and not just in the near future, I guess in the maybe throughout the next year or so.
Yeah, because like I said, we're hoping to do this study for the next 5 years. And so, yeah, for kind of the long term, next couple of years, we're asking for this help just because it takes a long time to catch them and tag them. And, you know, it's expensive. And so, yeah, we're just really hoping that anglers can cooperate with us and kind of help us, better manage this fishery.
You know, Faith, I have a angling question in regard to these northern pike. Much of the angling that I see in Utah Lake is not really conducive to catch pike. I mean, these are people are throwing worms and stuff. They're trying to catch the catfish. I don't even know how they would get a northern pike because they need to be targeted in a completely different strategy than people use at Utah Lake.
They do, yeah. And we do have a pretty avid, northern pike angling community that like to catch them.
So they're probably the ones that put them in there, right?
Probably, yeah. No, we don't know. But yeah, so this is kind of who that is geared towards because they can be difficult to catch. And that's partly also why we want people to cooperate is, it takes us a lot of time to catch all of these and insert these trackers. And so, but yeah, it is, I haven't fished for them. I've heard they are kind of a fun fish.
They're a blast.
Yeah.
There's no question. I think if the word was out that there were plenty in Utah Lake that would bring in northern pike anglers, I think you'd have a heck of a fishing day if you took them all out there to find them.
Right.
Tournament time.
Yeah. Faith, we're out of time, but it's always a pleasure to catch up with you, and we don't near often enough get a chance to say thanks for just keeping us on top of all this stuff and then occasionally getting a chance to talk with you. It's great.
Yeah, thanks again for having me on and for helping to spread some of these messages.
All right, Faith Jolly from the Division of Wildlife Resources joining us here on KSL. We've gone long, so we'll take a break. We'll come back with more of KSL Outdoors Radio here in just a minute.
A gun in the face.
Then all of a sudden they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
Started 2 years of horror for an American in Venezuela.
They said, you need to give us your phone and get ready because you're coming with us.
I'm Becky Bruce, and I spent a year researching and piecing together Josh and Tammy Holt's story about their ordeal in a notorious prison.
That's when everything started to turn bad. We had another pound on the door. Boom, boom, boom. And there was the police once again.
You can binge all of the episodes of Hope and Darkness on KSLpodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
We still have a snow day segment coming up here right after a news update on the half hour. But before we get there, I want to take you back. I was actually broadcasting on Thursday at the Utah Olympic Oval out in Kearns as the ISU World Championships got off to a great start. And I wanted to take you back out and talk to Melanie Welch to share with you what's still happening this weekend, today and tomorrow. Well, you can no doubt hear the noise in the background and the unmistakable sound of cowbells. That will tell you that you're at an Olympic-level event, and it's the big ISU World Championships that are happening here at the Olympic Oval in Kearns today. Melanie Welch is with me. It's good to see you again, first of all.
Good to see you, too.
Tell everybody what's happening. Now, we're recording this on Thursday because I was broadcasting here today, but as this airs on Saturday morning, there's still two more days of competition.
Yeah. So these are the best long track speed skaters in the world competing for the world championship title. So it's the best of the best, and they get one shot, basically. It's like an Olympic-style event.
When I talked to you on Thursday, I mentioned that some world records were set here. I didn't realize that all but two of the world records, at least in the long distances, have been set on this ice, and the other two, a women's 1,500, I think, and a men's 5,000, could drop this weekend.
Yeah, it's very likely. Almost every World Cup that we host here at this venue, we have a world record.
And the fans have been fantastic. It's the first day of competition as we're talking here, but the Dutch certainly have shown up in style, and my hope is that the American fans, the U.S. fans, will be here to give them some competition.
Absolutely. They might not have as good of costumes as the Dutch, however. If you see people in orange in Salt Lake, you know what they're here for.
Yeah, I don't know that there's anything to compete with the tulip hats on U.S. soil. My guess is there'll be a lot of 2002 gear, some old berets, and I've already seen some of the volunteer jackets that are floating around. Competition, though, again, as you listen to this on Saturday, will be happening most of the afternoon and then wrapping up tomorrow. Have you got those times in front of you?
I do. So on Saturday, we run from 12:30 to about 4 o'clock. And then Sunday, the doors open at 11:30 and we go till about 4 o'clock again.
Pricing for this is so low. I mean, for everybody. What is it, $18 for adults, I think?
Yep, $18 for adults and $7 for youth. And you can, anyone under the age of 5 is free. And you can grab tickets at the door. So it's a pretty fun family activity to do.
Or get them at Smith Ticks, but there's something else that you and your family should also be looking forward to doing, and that is just coming out outside the Oval. There's a big Legacy Winter Festival that's going on with live music and food, and I don't know how axe throwing and and mechanical bulls got involved with this, but it's all set up to have some fun.
Oh, you bet. We also have a petting zoo as part of the activities, and it's all free for anyone that comes by the Oval, so that's one thing to do that's great to do with the family. Even if you can't make it to the speed skating event, you can come and enjoy the free activities here at the Utah Olympic Oval.
Because of all of the Olympic work I've done since 2002, I happen to know that the people that are in charge of this ice have actually been recruited to go around the world and show their stuff for other events. Is that not right?
That's absolutely true. They actually travel ahead of all the future games that we have and teach a lot of those folks about all the stuff that they've done here to make this ice so fast.
And really, to come and see it is something spectacular, and you do kind of get feeling like you're back in 2002 again. During the broadcast on Thursday, we were also talking about the fact that there have been like 100 World Cup and World Championship events that have happened at all of the various venues since 2002.
Yeah, and actually, the venues are four times busier now than they were at the conclusion of the games, which is really exciting for legacy venues like these.
You know, it's unusual, I think, for
for bid cities to actually make money. But it is unheard of for a legacy fund to be put in place. And what a testament to that idea and the commitment to the Olympic Games.
Well, and you can see it in play right now. We have events going on at all three of our venues right at this very moment. And it's a pretty cool testament to their long-going effects.
You also gave me the opportunity to speak to, I think, two of the athletes who are competing here. One of them was a bronze medalist in Pyeongchang in 2018 on the team pursuit, Mia, and had a chance to talk to her. It's really special to hear their feelings as U.S. team members of what it means to compete here at home, but more importantly, to do it in front of home fans.
Oh, absolutely. You can always tell that they perform better when they have a full crowd cheering them on.
So invite everybody out. It's not too late. You won't miss all of the action. If you get out here today, it's the Utah Olympic Oval in Kearns. Everybody should know where that is, I would think. And events happening this afternoon and then again tomorrow.
That's correct. At UtahOlympicLegacy.org if you want some more information.
Great stuff. And remember, Smith Tix is the place to get your tickets, or you can get them here at the door. $18 for adults, $7 for kids. But if they're under five, they're going to get in free. And again, you don't have to come in and watch the event. I don't know why you'd stay outside the door if you were right here. But you can also come and take advantage of the fun that's happening at the Legacy Winter Festival here in Kearns. Thanks so much. It's good to see you, Melanie.
Good to see you. Thanks.
We'll take a quick break. We'll come back with more of KSL Outdoors in just a minute.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now, too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.